We would never dream of such a thing, Gilbert sputtered. Why not?
It would be dishonest, that's why. Or does that not matter to you?
Martin said, You're telling your audience that you're going to do magic. Why would it be dishonest to go ahead and do magic? Sid said,
Because, mate, the audience expects us to fool them. They don't think a magician can really do magic. They come to be entertained by a lie. We can't get up there and show them something that's not a lie. We'd have lured them in under false pretenses. Can't you understand that?
Martin's mouth said that he could, but his face said that he couldn't.
When people walk out of a magic show, Gilbert explained, they say, I wonder how he did that. They picture lots of mirrors and trap doors, strings that are too fine to see, that sort of thing. Imagine how unsatisfying it would be if they found out the answer was, he did it with magic.
They'd be terribly disappointed.
So you have magic powers, but your act is made up of normal magician's tricks.
Yes. It's the only honest way to proceed.
Do you invent the tricks yourselves?
No, we go to the future and copy them from modern magicians.
Martin said, So you're thieves. Sid smiled and said,
That's what you say later, when you find out what we are doing for the first time.
Martin said, Well, it's good to know I agree with me. Gwen had never been much for parties. Her usual plan was to find the quietest part of the room, go there, and try not to make it any louder. She had spent most of the evening getting caught in, then escaping from, conversations with men she'd never met and knew nothing about. It would have been nice if she could have latched on to either Philip or Martin and spent the evening teamed up with one of them. But Britt the Elder had specifically asked her to leave Philip to his own devices for the evening. And Martin was acting strange, which, sadly for Martin, wasn't all that strange. Along the wall, where Gwen could easily reach it, there was a door that led to a balcony. She might be able to get away from the crowd for a few minutes, but the whole point of this wingding was to meet new people. It would be bad form to spend the evening hiding from the very people she was supposed to meet. Instead of fleeing for the cool night air outside, Gwen stood there, alone in the crowd, looking and feeling tremendously uncomfortable. Gwen didn't see the tall, muscular guard who slowly approached her, looking furtively around, checking to see if anybody was watching. She didn't see him close his eyes and take a deep breath, as if psyching himself up for something. She didn't hear him mutter encouragement to himself. The guard opened his eyes and took two steps to his left so as to enter Gwen's field of view. Gwen saw the man approach, and at first she thought he was one of the typical city guards. Then she thought he was a guard who for some reason had a limp. Then she thought he was suffering a petit mal seizure. Finally, she realized he was just walking strangely. The men who were chosen to be the official guards were usually the very model of physical grace, but there was a jerky, forced uneasiness to this one's gait. The guard walked up to her. His smile was slightly goofy, and his eyes almost glowed with manic energy. The guard said, Hi. Gwen said,
Hello.
There was a pause while the guard thought, then he said,
My name is Ampix.
Gwen squinted at the guard.
Have we met before?
Again, the guard calculated his response carefully before saying,
Yes, you chose me to escort the visitors from your homeland. Thank you for that.
Oh,
Gwen said.
How did you like my friends?
I did not like them,
Ampix said enthusiastically.
I found them distasteful.
Oh,
Gwen said.
But I also realized that you made me endure them so that I, and only I, would see what it is you've been looking for in a servant all this time. No wonder you've rejected us. None of the men here were nearly weird, annoying, and uncoordinated enough to suit your particular tastes.
And you are?
Gwen asked, equal parts amused and horrified.
No,
Ampix said, his facade dropping for a moment to express his outrage at the very idea. Then his forced, goofy smile returned, and he said,
But if I concentrate, I can feign being this way for you.
That's impressive,
Gwen said. Again, a moment's thought, then Ampix said,
Thanks! Yeah, of course it would be a great shame to myself and my family if I acted like this in public. I'm only doing it now as a demonstration. Were you to choose me as your servant, I would put on this act for you only in our bedchamber.
I see. And in public?
I would act like a proper man.
At some point, while nobody was looking, tables and chairs had appeared around the periphery of the room. They were probably brought in by servants, but nobody had noticed it happening, so it seemed like magic. Britt the Younger sat alone at one of the tables, trying to be invisible. Philip approached with two large, overtly decorative beverages. Philip said,
I asked for whiskey, but all they had were piña coladas and mimosas, so I got one of each. Take whichever you like, and I'll have the other.
As he set the two drinks down, she said,
Thank you, that's very sweet, but if you don't particularly want one over the other, and they didn't have what you asked for, why did you get them at all?
Philip thought about that as he settled into his seat.
Well, I didn't want to come back empty-handed. I consider just conjuring up two glasses of scotch, but it felt like to do that when there was an open bar would be, I don't know, disrespectful to my host somehow.
Britt the Younger said,
You have a point. I suppose it would be.
She lifted her hand in front of her face and swiped her finger through the air. The tip of her finger glowed and left a vapor trail as she moved it from her right to her left, then from the bottom of her field of vision to the top. To the uninitiated, it probably seemed like she was casting some sort of spell, but to Philip, or anyone else who had ever used a modern computer interface, she was clearly making selections from a computer menu that only she could see. Finally, she jabbed her finger straight ahead twice, then traced a circle on the tabletop with her other hand. Two glasses of scotch appeared. She handed one to Philip, who took it happily.
Excellent, he said. Next round's on me.
Philip held the glass to his nose and lightly breathed in through his mouth, letting the fumes from the drink gently ascend into his nostrils.
Oh, that's nice,
he said before taking a sip. Britt swallowed her first sip, savored it for a moment, then said,
I can make anything I want. I don't see any point in making crap.
Philip leaned back, looking first at the glass in his hand, then at the woman who gave it to him. He thought for a long moment, then said,
I've been thinking I should give...
Philip paused. Calling Britt the Elder Britt while talking to Britt the Younger seemed wrong somehow.
My host, a thank you gift. Do you think a bottle of good scotch would be nice?
Yeah, Britt said. That'd be great. I'd love it if you gave her a bottle of scotch. She hates the stuff.
Philip looked at her for a long moment, then said,
I'm sorry. I have to admit, I'm having a lot of trouble getting my head around this.
Britt said,
Yeah, join the club.
She took another sip. Philip looked into his drink again, but nothing he saw there made the situation easier to understand. He looked at the woman across from him again, enjoying her drink, and seemingly not much else. Finally, he thought,
If we're going to talk, let's really talk.
There are those who say that because nothing we do seems to change the future, it means that whatever we do now has to be what we did in the past. Essentially, they say that all of our decisions were made for us, and that all we can do is play our parts. They tell us that any effort we make to change the course of history or our own destiny is futile, and ultimately results in us becoming the very thing we struggled to keep from becoming.
Britt peered at him over the rim of her glass, pulled the drink down from her mouth without actually taking a drink, then asked Philip,
That's what they say. What do you say?
Philip smiled.
Usually something loud and insulting. I am my own man. I make my own decisions. If the universe expects me to do anything different, it should prepare for a fight. I reject the idea that just because we can see the future, that we're doomed to create it. I say free will and imagination are deeply linked, and if you don't believe you have one, it just means that you lack the other.
Philip realized he was raising his voice. He took a deep breath.
I get a little crazy when this topic comes up, Philip said. I'm sorry. I'll stop now.
No,
Britt said.
Please, go on.
The evening was wearing on, and Martin felt overwhelmed. He'd met too many people, made too much small talk, and found too little of it interesting. He was understimulated. He decided to retreat to the nearest balcony and get some air. When he got outside, he was surprised to find Gwen there, leaning forward on the railing with her back to the door. Martin walked up, quietly enough to not demand her attention, but loudly enough to avoid startling her. He leaned back onto the railing so that he and Gwen were next to one another, but facing opposite directions. She looked up at the city, a thousand flickering light boxes heaped all around them. He looked through the door into the party they were both avoiding. Martin asked,
"Who's that jerk who's been hanging around with you and Philip this afternoon?"
Gwen chuckled.
"Oh, he's just this guy I kind of almost had a thing with. He seems kind of needy."
Gwen turned to face Martin, but remained leaning casually on the rail.
"He's not so bad. He's smart and he's cute. He makes me smile, which counts for a lot. He just needs to learn to cool it sometimes."
Martin turned to look at her.
"Is that why you didn't want me to come here?"
Gwen said,
"For example, this would be a good time to cool it."
And turned her face back to the city and away from Martin.
"Gwen, seriously, if you don't want me around, I'll keep my distance. I'm not interested in forcing my company on someone who doesn't want it. I can avoid you for the next 2 weeks, if that's what you want."
Gwen asked,
"Do you want to avoid me, Martin? I want us both to be happy. Being around you makes me happy, so that's one of us. But if it makes you unhappy, well, that's a problem." "Having you around doesn't make me unhappy."
"Good,"
Martin said.
"Not the highest praise I've ever heard. Wouldn't look good on a greeting card, but it's a start."
Gwen smiled.
"Having you around makes me happy, Martin. Really. It's just we only knew each other for a couple of weeks, and then I had to move here. I thought I might invite you out to visit and see how things went, but then I got here, and you've seen this place. Would you invite a guy here?"
"No, I would not," Martin admitted. "I have to admit, I was happy to hear that you haven't claimed a servant yet. I had some ideas about what a female-led society would be like. None of them featured scantily clad beefcake and sexual service provider as a viable career path."
Gwen said,
"Well, the sex with servants thing doesn't happen as often as the men would have you believe."
"That's good to hear."
"I mean, it does happen," Gwen said. "Often, just not quite as often as they say. It's pretty bad, I agree, but don't judge the girls too harshly. If you think about it, it's the same arrangement as a wealthy old man and his trophy wife, only our way is more emotionally honest. Besides, a lot of the girls aren't romantically involved with their servants. They just picked a man they enjoy hanging around with." "By the way," Gwen said, "one of the guards is acting weird. I think he's trying to imitate you."
"Oh, yeah, that would be Ampix. How's his impression?"
"Pretty insulting."
Martin laughed.
"Good. If we play this right, we could have him wearing silver sequins by the end of the week."
Inside the hall, the party was beginning to wind down. The conversation was getting quiet, and the crowd was getting sparse. Philip had spent the better part of an hour telling Britt the Younger all of his theories that explained their apparent lack of impact on the future, while still allowing for free will. He had many possible explanations, but in the end, she shook her head and said that none of them really applied to her.
"See,"
she explained,
I decided to come back here and see if there was an Atlantis. And about a second before I left, I thought, if there isn't one, I could just go back in time a little further and build Atlantis myself.
And what happened?
Philip asked.
Exactly that, I guess. I got here and found the city pretty much as you see it, only there was this huge welcoming ceremony all set up waiting for me. There's music and cheering, and some woman who looks exactly like me walks up and hugs me and says that she's me, and there was no Atlantis before I came along. So I went back in time to build the city so it'd be here when I got here.
Philip's face twisted in concentration.
That just makes no sense.
Yeah, Britt said. I noticed.
But if she's you, and she got here and found no Atlantis, then you'd have found no Atlantis when you got here,
Britt said.
Yes, but she didn't get here and find no Atlantis. She found Atlantis as you see it now, and another woman who looked just like her and claimed to be her and have built Atlantis. Then, 50 years later, she went back in time, built Atlantis, and waited for me to show up.
Philip said,
So her memories do match your memories.
No,
Britt said.
Her memories match my present. Everything I do, she's done. Everything I think, she's thought. If I do something right, she gets the credit. If I do something wrong, she's the first to admit it, usually before or while I'm doing it. That's why none of your theories work in my case. You're explaining why we have no effect on the future. The future isn't my problem. She isn't in the future. She's here now. And as long as she's here, nothing I do affects the present.
Philip looked at her, sitting there, staring miserably at the empty glasses in front of her. She made it sound so futile.
I'm sure that's just the booze talking,
he thought. Then he thought,
no, it's her talking, but it's the booze thinking.
He wasn't far wrong. The alcohol in her system was affecting her thinking. Britt looked at Philip and thought,
he's cute. In a rumpled, worn-in kind of way. Older me wanted me to get to know him. I don't know why, but I tend to think I wouldn't like it if I did.
They made eye contact. They smiled. Then there was a hollow, popping noise, like someone opening a bottle of champagne. Philip looked alarmed, then in one movement stood up and swung his staff very fast overhand toward Britt's head. Britt instinctively cringed, shielding her head with both arms. Philip shouted something she didn't quite catch. Then her world was nothing but noise and confusion. Gwen and Martin heard the crash from the balcony. They ran into the hall and found chaos. The lights came up. Martin could see that one of the large goddess statues that stood around the circumference of the room had fallen. There was a base, a pair of sculpted feet, and a nasty, ragged break at the thinnest part of the goddess's ankles. In front of that, there was a field of dust, shards of broken statue, crushed tables and chairs, and in the middle of it all stood Philip, his staff held far out in front of him like an axe stopped mid-swing. The debris on the floor was piled thick everywhere except for a perfect circle radiating outward from the tip of Philip's staff. Inside the circle, free from any damage, were Philip, the table he'd been sitting at, the chair that had been opposite him, and in the chair, directly under the tip of the staff, and as such at the center of the protected circle, Britt the Younger, looking confused. Philip said,
Forige Shildo.
And for an instant, the outline of a dome of energy could be seen covering Philip and Britt before it disappeared. Philip practically ran around the table and took Britt by the hand, helping her up.
Are you all right?
He asked.
Yes,
she said.
I think so.
Martin and Gwen slid to a stop after running across the hall.
Are you two okay?
Martin asked.
Yes, we're both fine,
Philip said.
Was anybody hurt?
By this time, everyone who was still in attendance was standing around looking at the damage. Nobody seemed injured. It seemed that Philip and Britt the Younger were the only people who had been in the statue's landing zone. Gwen looked at the damaged statue's base and asked,
What happened?
From across the room, a woman's voice called out,
I'll tell you exactly what happened.
Everyone turned to see Britt the Elder walking serenely through the crowd. She reached the debris field and said,
Just as I remembered it, Philip was listening to me, complaining about the trivial things that seemed like problems to me at that age.
Britt the Elder walked to the table and looked at the three empty whiskey glasses in front of Britt the Younger's chair and shook her head. Britt the Younger's face turned bright red. Britt the Elder said,
"The hard stuff always did make me mopey. Anyway, dear Philip saw the statue break and start to fall, and did some very quick thinking in his attempt to save me from being hurt."
She bent at the knees, reached down, and picked up a broken piece of statue about a foot long. She stood up again and examined the chunk of debris. Philip said,
"It really wasn't much. It's just a simple shield spell."
"It was very sweet of you,"
Britt the Elder said,
"and also unnecessary. Much like you, we've manipulated the file to make ourselves impervious to damage."
To emphasize the point, Britt the Elder smashed the piece of debris she was holding over Britt the Younger's head. Britt the Younger flinched and yelped, but it was out of surprise, not pain. Britt the Younger said,
"You didn't know that, though, and it's the thought that counts."
Britt the Elder said,
"I agree."
She turned to Britt the Younger and said,
"And I think it's about time for you to go get some sleep."